Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Real Fake Baseball for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. I am Paul Martin, your host, and I am here with my co-host tonight, Walter McMichael, at Real Fake Walter, if you want to follow him on Twitter. Walter, let me ask the obligatory, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. I just had to do a half day working from home with a sick child, and then I needed to take the second half of the day off because the sick child just wanted me to hold him. So it's been a long day, but I'm excited to talk. We started TGFBI. I know I've been excited about it. How's your league going?
I feel like I'm drafting with a bunch of sick children right now, Walter, if we're being completely honest. let me not go ahead and throw shade on the entire league right now. I am drafting with a bunch of great people. Joe Pisapia, our friend Donkey Teeth, is in the league as well. Benjamin Pernick, the Daniel Johnston of the fantasy baseball community. And I feel like I'm in a really good draft right now. Tim Heaney, one of my favorite people. He shared a beer with me when I was at Tout Wars last year at Foley's. So that was pretty fun. And I'm having a good time doing the draft. We're in round 13. You told me you're in round 14 right now. I thought we were cooking, but that's pretty good. And I think everyone's just excited to talk about the great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. So even though we're trying to do a little bit more of a dynasty turn this year, I think we could take a rest and talk about the TGFBI leagues right now. So is there anything that general that you want to get out of the way before we get into the deep dives?
Well, I do have a question for you. What was your general strategy going into this?
My general strategy was just kind of just don't – like you honestly, you molded my general strategy with your text to me that said, don't think too much. That is what you texted me when I said, I don't know if I should draft Lindor at 15. And you said, don't think too much. So I took Lindor at 15, I took Judge at 16, and ever since then, I've just been kind of going with whoever I like that's on the board. And I've been trying to draft pitchers when I think it's necessary, I've been trying to draft hitters when I think it's necessary, but basically right now, I'm just trying to draft who I like, and I think that that's kind of key. What about you? How have you been doing with your draft?
Yeah, I think that don't think too much, and think yourself out of the pick that you want to make at a certain point is really smart. And one of the things I've been trying to do is kind of not necessarily ignore ADP, but kind of ignore ADP, because if you don't want to sit there and just hope a guy's going to make it back to you when you really want that player and you think that they're worth the pick that you're at. Just take the guy that you want at that spot. Don't worry about the ADP. So I jumped a couple guys on ADP, which I'm not really worried about, and it ends up where in the TGFBI ADP they're actually kind of right in line as opposed to the NFBC one. One of the big things I like is to take an ace early and then kind of skip over that overvalued tier of like SP2, SP3s. So I didn't take my next pitcher until Chris Archer. And it wasn't really my plan to take two closers, but as we'll get into later, closers got way pushed down in all the leagues. So yeah, I think it was just like you said, don't overthink it and just take the guys that you really want at those spots.
Yeah, so why don't we get into that right away is your ace, because you took an ace and I wasn't able to get an ace because I was pick 15 in my draft. I got the turn, and when I came up, everyone was gone. The only pitcher that was left was Corey Kluber. I wasn't taking him at 15. That was just what I settled on. I ended up taking Francisco Lindor, which I think was a pretty good value right there, and then I took Aaron Judge, which is our boy that's on brand with the Real Fake Baseball brand. I think that we can both agree that that was a solid pick. Why don't we talk about who you took with your first couple picks and your strategy on pitching, because you were able to get Chris Sale. Am I wrong?
Yeah. I had the 12th pick, and actually Sale and DeGrom were both there at the 12th pick. I know the general population would say you take DeGrom there, but I try not to let recency bias of Sale being hurt 1 year kind of overshadow that – DeGrom hasn't been in Sale's league until last year. In 2017, 2016, 2015, all of those years pretty much, Sale has been a better pitcher than Jacob DeGrom. And yes, I understand that last year DeGrom was probably the second most valuable pitcher in baseball behind Max Scherzer. But on any per inning basis, Chris Sale's, in my opinion, the best pitcher in baseball. So I went with Chris Sale.
Yeah, I don't think that's that's a solid bet. I would have Jake DeGrom as my number one pitcher, and I don't think that that is a common belief either. I think most people would have Scherzer as their number one pitcher. But something about DeGrom developing at this late of an age, like, I feel like he just continues to get better as a pitcher, which is kind of crazy to think about when he's already one of the better pitchers in the league. So last year was kind of a step for him, and I feel like the more that he gets used to this pitch mix, the more that he gets used to his higher velocity, the more that he gets used to the movement on his fastball, I think that he can even become a better pitcher. So for me, DeGrom is the number one pitcher. I probably would have went DeGrom over Sale, but I can't really disagree with your argument just because Sale has been a better per inning pitcher up to this point. So, I mean, what you're saying is totally factual. So either one of them is going to be a good bet at that point. Late, what did you have, pick 12?
Yeah, pick 12.
Yeah, so that's a good bet
I figured one of them would make it to me, and I was thinking Sale would be the one that would make it to me. I didn't expect both of them to be there where I would have to make a decision, but just so ended up I needed to make a decision, and DeGrom went the pick right after me. So
yeah, it's tough to make that decision. When I came up, everyone was gone. Even Verlander was gone at the point when I was drafting. So I couldn't go with a pitcher at that point.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want the wheel, just because I wanted to get an ace, and I figured 12 was a good spot to get one of the aces. I think 12 and 10 were pretty high up there on my KDS, so I wanted one of those areas just to take like a Sale, DeGrom. And then second round, Francisco Lindor kind of fell to me, and I was very happy getting Lindor there. That's like a I realize that he's hurt, and he could miss a little bit of time early, but he could also be ready opening day and just be perfectly fine for Francisco Lindor, and you're getting him in the second round.
Oh, yeah, that's pure profit at that point. If you ask me, there's no possible way that he doesn't get 30 and 20 this year. I mean, sure, like, he did get 15 stolen bases 2 years ago, but I don't see a situation where he's not pulling back incredible fantasy numbers, especially for a second round pick in your case. I mean, for me, technically he was a first round pick because I did take him before Judge and I took him at 15, but as far as I'm concerned, he was a second round pick for me, and I'm completely happy with that. But I did what you didn't want to do, and I ended up taking Patrick Corbin and James Paxton with my second two picks. So I don't know if you agree with that or not, but are these two of your more favorite pitchers out of that second tier, perhaps?
Yeah. See, part of the issue is I think that a lot of them are kind of like they kind of come with similar risks that, like, I get that Corbin had the great year last year and Paxton has been really good, but Paxton also has innings concerns. Corbin, I don't know. I just don't know how sustainable it is where he's just throwing one third of his pitches in the strike zone and just getting a ton of swinging strikes outside of the zone. So it's like I have a lot of question marks with these pitchers. And I think I also really like the upside of like Tyler Glasnow and Alex Reyes types later, because I think they have similar upside to like Corbin and Paxton. But yeah, if I have to dive into like that area, Corbin is definitely a good option there.
Yeah, I mean, my thought process going into those two picks was basically, if these guys get 160 innings pitched this year, they're both getting 200 strikeouts. They're probably going to have a mid to low threes ERA. And, I mean, they can easily be aces. If they get the innings pitched, that's really all it is with these two guys. So I know that there's no DL in this league, and that's going to be tough with James Paxton and Patrick Corbin. But at the same time, Patrick Corbin threw 200 innings last year. James Paxton showed a little bit improvement, I guess, with the injuries. And I just think that one of these two guys can easily become an ace this year. And then I took Kyle Hendricks later on, which is, I think, one of our favorite floor pitchers, and I think that he's just a solid, solid pitcher overall. I think he's going to get a low whip. I think he's going to low ERA, and I think he's going to get a decent amount of strikeouts, and I think taking Aroldis Chapman as a closer will probably be a good key to this picture. And Aroldis Chapman is someone that is being taken lower than his NFBC ADP, and it looks like a bunch of the closers are being taken lower than their NFBC ADP. So what's your take on this? Because you took Blake Treinen and Craig Kimbrell, who are both very, very much lower than their NFBC ADP. So I have to get your thought on the early closers here.
Yeah, so I was looking at when I took Treinen, it was after – it was like I was looking at the ADP and I was like, okay, well, I have a feeling the closer run's coming and let me just get Treinen here. I like him more than the other relievers not named Edwin Diaz. He was actually the number one reliever last year, overall. So I thought him as the second reliever off the board was good. He's pretty safe for I mean, he's not going to lose the job. He's safe for ratios, good strikeouts. I took him, and then closers just kept falling, and closers just kept falling, and they just kept falling and kept falling. And then Craig Kimbrell made it back to me as well, and I was like, well, how about I just take two elite guys, and obviously Craig Kimbrell does not have a job, but it's why true. Don't I just take two elite guys – and let other people fight and waste all their fab on the whoever the new Hunter Strickland is from last year that people spend 40% of their fab budget on week one.
Who was the Jacob Barnes? Was that the Brewers one?
Oh yeah, Jacob Barnes, the one who saved like one. It was like he was closer. Everybody spent all their fab, and then yeah. The next day he wasn't their closer.
Yep. That is a huge part of this sort of a league too. So that's why I took Chapman, and I figured that Chapman is easily one of the safest as far as the job goes. I don't think anyone is taking his job in New York. And as far as talent goes, like, I understand that he was worse last year, but worse for Aroldis Chapman means that he had over 95 strikeouts in about 57 innings of work, and he still had close to 40 saves last year, so I'm okay with taking him where I got him. And I think that it's kind of a safe bet that he's the kind of guy that you don't have to drop all year. You don't have to worry about him not getting at least 35 saves during the year. And he's someone that's probably going to net at least 80% of the Yankees' total saves. So that's someone that I was looking at completely. I mean, Edwin Diaz is another dude that's probably going to net at least 80% of the team's saves. Blake Treinen and, you know, Craig Kimbrell, depending on what team he goes to, is probably going to net that many saves. But
Kenley Jansen,
and then past those five, that's, you know, kind of questionable. Ozuna, sure. I mean, maybe Giles, but the Blue Jays are not what they used to be. So after those five, it's really tough, and I feel like Chapman is going at a really good discount right now.
Yeah, at least in TGFBI, he did. Definitely did. So yeah. What I ended up doing third round, I had Vlad fall into my lap, and, you know, I just had to take Vlad. He's just too good. He's too good. And
that's your boy.
And I love getting that batting average floor. So, like, even the doubters have to admit he has such a high floor for batting average once he makes the majors. Like, I think everybody has to admit that. And I got into a long Twitter argument about Vlad yesterday where the guy was telling me about, like, former failed top prospects, and I was like, I just don't think you understand how rare an 80 grade hit tool is. It just doesn't happen.
How many of those failed prospects hit 400 for in a complete minor season? That's, you know, like, that's
Yeah, he hit 400 in double A as a 19-year-old. It's it's just these other guys just – they're just not – they're not the same. No. And then the fourth round, I came back with Yasiel Puig. And that's a guy that projection systems just love right now. He's projected to be like a 30 home run hitting, 15 stolen base, 270 batting average kind of guy. And I've always loved Puig, and I'm just buying this year. I think he's going to be really, really, really good.
Yeah, I'm definitely into Puig, the power-speed combination for sure. I mean, he's going to hit for probably a positive average too, so that's all helpful. I mean, for a fourth-round pick, you can't really go wrong there. I think there's a lot of bad fourth-round picks, and I think that Puig is someone that can provide a profit as well as a floor that is most likely a fourth-round pick in general, because he's probably going to hit 20 home runs. He's probably going to hit steal 10 bags. And, you know, 260, 270 average is in the bag with a dude like that. So anything after that is profit as far as fourth round goes. I took my pitchers third, fourth, fifth round. So the sixth round, I came back with David Dahl. And I know that that's someone that you've been buying in a few leagues and I've kind of been hesitant on. But I just felt like after taking Lindor, Judge, and then three pitchers in a row, I was looking for a little upside there, and I thought that David Dahl was the perfect combination of power, speed, average, cores, all the things that you want to buy as far as a fantasy baseball player goes.
Yeah, you got to throw cores in there.
Exactly. But yeah, you got to throw cores in there.
I almost took Dahl in this league, but I ended up taking – so fifth round I went Blake Treinen, and then I had a decision between Victor Robles and David Dahl. And I kind of decided on Victor Robles because David Dahl, he does have that pretty extreme, like he's ultra aggressive. So there is a little bit of risk there with just being a super aggressive hitter. And I like Robles's like the batting average and stolen base kind of floor there a little bit better. But yeah, Dahl was second in my queue. Like I remember I was doing something and the guy before me was on the clock, and I put Robles and Dahl in my queue and put it on auto as them 1-2, and then Dahl went the pick right after me. So I like the Dahl pick. There's tons of upside there with him.
I was thinking about Robles too, but Robles went before Dahl, so I figured Dahl. Okay. Dahl was the pick. So, I took Dahl over Eloy, so.
So the same scenario.
Yeah, pretty much.
Went Robles right over David Dahl. But yeah, I think they're both really good picks at that stage. Tons of upside for both of them.
Yeah, definitely. So who did you go? Because, I mean, the seventh and eighth round is kind of where it gets to a preference sort of pick, I would say. It's when it starts to get to a preference sort of pick, at least. So at the seventh and eighth round, where were you looking right there?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. So a couple relievers went before me. So Aroldis Chapman, then Brad Hand, and then I snapped up Craig Kimbrell in the seventh round. If Craig Kimbrell had a team, he would not be going in the seventh round. Right. I think we can all agree with that. And he's going to sign. So I took Craig Kimbrell, and then that started a little run there. Like Jose Leclerc went after Felipe Vasquez, Josh Hader, Raisel Iglesias, Wade Davis, Sean Doolittle, Ken Giles, all went within the next like 20 picks. So it started a little closer run there by me taking Craig Kimbrell after Hand and Chapman had already come off the board. So I figured that was going to happen, and I would already have two, so people would let some of the other players I'm looking at fall a little bit if I took another closer. And then I took Justin Turner, and I think if you listen to our podcast, you know my love for Justin Turner. I legitimately think he could be like a 320, 30 home run hitter, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. It's all about health, but I think he could easily return like second or third round value.
Yeah, definitely. I was the one that started the closer run in my league. Treinen went first, or Diaz went first, then Treinen. And then I took Chapman, and then after Chapman went, it was Kimbrell, Jansen, Hand, Vasquez, and Ozuna in the same round, and then Hader went in the round after that. So that's when I took Dal, and I ended up taking Joey Gallo. I mean, that's kind of my boy this year. I feel like the average can't be as bad as it was, and 40 home runs is easily the floor for this guy. With a non-zero in stolen bases, I mean, it was just clear value at that point. At the end of the seventh round, I was taking that all day, and then, of course, I have the turn. I have the 15th pick, so I took Gallo and Tim Anderson back-to-back, which seems like the strikeout... I don't know. Like, that's all the strikeouts in the world that you need right there. But, I mean, Tim Anderson had 20 home runs, 26 stolen bases last year. And he improved his hit tool just a little bit. So, I mean, even if he doesn't improve the hit tool even more next year, I feel like at least 240 with a 2020 floor right now. Because his power is legit, his speed is legit, and it's just the average that I'm trying to buy into.
Yeah, I was actually for my seventh round pick, I was hoping Gallo would make it to me because I had built up some batting average and stolen bases, and I was hoping that would cover up Gallo's batting average deficiency and he would cover the power end of all that. But he got picked before he could make it to me in the seventh round, unfortunately. But what can you do? You just got to adjust.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just feel like Gallo is being overlooked this year. I mean, for what he provides as a floor, like 40 home runs is not easy to come by. I don't understand why people, like, I get that the average is terrible. Supplement it. Do whatever you have to do, because this is a guy that is going to change the game as far as power goes. Like, if you take a couple 20 home run hitters and you take Gallo, then that is going to be huge for your team because he's going to double their outcome. It's incredible how undervalued he is for what he provides.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love Gallo. But so after that, I went Chris Archer. I think that with Chris Sale and my two relievers, they could cover up if he continues to struggle with ratios, but he's just a solid source of strikeouts every single year.
Oh yeah.
And then I took Nomar Mazara, who isn't a guy that I've really loved, but I think he's a pretty safe bet for around 20 to 25 home runs and like a 270 to 280 average, and projection systems like him a lot. He hits high in the order, so he's going to get runs and RBIs. So I think he's just a nice, solid – he's like a floor guy, but he also has upside, because I read a report where they said he's working on his swing to get a little more loft in it.
Oh, yeah. I could definitely see him getting like a 30 home run total. Hopefully that helps out. For sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we were kind of doing similar things at that point where, like, we were like, well, you were trying to get the average, you said? Or you set up the average.
I'm still setting up the average and trying so I can take a little bit more risks later on in the draft on some poor average home run hitters. So right now we are in the 14th round. So I'm hoping in the 15th round, Randall Grichuk makes it to me.
Yeah,
because he's pretty much a 30 home run hitter, but he might hit like 220.
I feel like I did the opposite. Like, I feel like I started off with Lindor and Judge, which I think is at least a 270 average floor, which maybe people still think Judge is going to hit lower than 270. But I feel like those people are antiquated and they need to get their stats up. But either way, like, I went Dahl, Gallo, and Anderson with the three hitters after that. So that's an aggressive approach right there. And those guys can strike out a ton. They might not hit for really good average. But then when I came back, I went with Kyle Hendricks, obviously, who I think is a great, great floor pitcher right there. But then my next three hitters were Andrew McCutchen, Ramon Laureano, and Cesar Hernandez, who I feel like can give me a solid floor as far as the average goes. So I was kind of looking for that late average boost right there because I wanted to secure the average, but at the same time, I don't really think that average is something that you can secure. I feel like home runs, I feel like stolen bases, I feel like those are the kind of things that you can really secure on the hitting side. And average is kind of fluctuating year to year. So what are your thoughts on that strategy?
I think I think I agree and disagree. Wow. Because I think
you're gonna can I you balance certain, on that fence, Walter? Are you okay? No, do you need me to guide you?
I think if you're saying a 270 hitter can hit between 260 to 280 on a given year, I agree. But I think that certain profiles, like say Gallo, he's not gonna. There's no way he's gonna be better than a negative in batting average. Like I don't see a way where he hits over 230.
Well, like, I think he can hit. No, I mean I think he could hit at least 240, 250. But I could see. I mean no, I could see where he's gonna hit 230.
Yeah, I just don't see him hitting 240 or 250. Yeah, that's high. That's high. He's hit like 210 each of the last 2 years.
Yeah, I get it. But he's still young and he's still developing, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's why I said like 230. That's him developing. That's like a 20-point jump. But I think that like I don't see a way where Justin Turner hits like 260. Like I think he's gonna be a plus batting average this year. No matter what, I think his profile is plus batting average. That's why, like, early on, Daniel Murphy was a target of mine. He's going to hit for a plus batting average. I think we can pretty much all agree Daniel Murphy in cores is going to hit for a plus batting average.
Right.
I think Vlad is pretty much – I know people are going to think it's crazy, but I think he's a lock to hit for a plus batting average. So I think certain players – like Puig, yeah, I could see him hitting like 250 even though he's like projected for around 270. So I was just trying to lock in a couple guys I think have plus batting average profiles.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean I feel like that's what I was trying to do with McCutchen. I think that you know last year was a little bit rough on McCutchen. I think that he's at least a 260, 270 hitter.
I love McCutchen where you got him.
Yeah, Cesar Hernandez, I think that last year was light on the batting average too. Obviously, he's a good boost in OBP, but I think that he's a 270 hitter. And if he's hitting leadoff for the Phillies, then that's going to be crazy too. And, I mean, I was texting you today about Ramon Laureano. I think that this dude is an absolute sleeper this year. This dude has never not hit in the minors. He comes up to the majors. He hits again. He hits again in the majors, but people get bogged down with his center field antics, and he's making great plays, and I feel like people are kind of just shutting him down as a defense-only sort of prospect, and it's like, dude, this man can put up a Benintendi stat line in 2019, and I would not be shocked at all. What do you think about Laureano?
Because you don't really,
you're wishy-washy on this dude. So I want to get your negative thoughts on him so I can just bash him.
I mean, I think he's fine. But is he like, is he going to be better than like Cedric Mullins?
Yeah, no, I think he definitely will. I mean, his minor league stats will show that he's just more statistically strong. I feel like for fantasy, this is a dude that has multiple seasons with 30 stolen bases. He has multiple seasons with double-digit home runs. Last year, he hit for more power than ever, and he always has had a strong average. So I think that, yeah, Cedric Mullins is a great late round bet. But I think that Ramon Laureano is in a better lineup. And I think that he's overall just a more exciting fantasy player because I feel like Cedric Mullins is like Ramon Laureano light. I feel like he can do maybe like a 12 home run, maybe like an 18 stolen base sort of season. But I think that Ramon Laureano can legitimately get a 2020 season this year.
I think we might have a bet coming on, Cedric Mullins versus Ramon Laureano. The other thing you have to remember with Laureano is since he is on a better team, there's risk of playing time. If he does struggle a bit.
Yeah, but
Cedric Mullins is going to 100%.
Yeah, but who's playing center field? Who are the Athletics putting in center field over Laureano is what I want to know. Tell me
who
now.
Who knows?
Tell me now. Because this man, I don't know if you've seen, but his center field playing ability is ridiculous. And we all know it already. He tied Jackie Bradley Jr. for the most center field assists. And he played one-third of the games, Walter. He is playing center field for the Athletics next year. I don't care. Really playing center, time has nothing to do with it.
Center field assists.
Huh? Excuse me? Pardon?
I said center field assists. Really? That's what we're doing?
No, what we're doing right now is you're calling him out as far as how much time is he going to play this year, and I'm saying that he is an amazing center fielder, and they're going to want him out there regardless of what he's doing as far as the hitting goes, and I'm pretty sure that his hitting is going to be just fine, but if you want to question it, then I will tell you that his center field playing ability is so good that he's going to be out there regardless. So worry all you want.
Where does he hit in the lineup? That's the other question.
I'm not really sure, but I mean, his bat is a top of the order sort of bat, but it all depends on where they want to hit him. That's all it is. I mean, he hits the ball hard, he runs a lot, and he can steal bases with efficiency. So he is the kind of guy that you want in the top of your order for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Cedric Mullins, leadoff hitter, 100%.
Leadoff hitter in front of Chris Davis. He's going to be Jonathan scoring 100 runs for Cedric Mullins this year. Watch out.
But just that plate appearance total, that's what matters.
Well, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to target Cedric Mullins later in the draft. I'm just saying that Ramon Laureano has a more solid chance of actually going 2020 this year than Cedric Mullins.
Yeah, if he does, that's all you. That's a win for you.
I can't wait. I can't 11th wait to win
round. 11th round. I took Tyler Glasnow. You know, very me pick.
Yep. Tyler Glasnow went before Ramon Laureano. I probably would have taken Tyler Glasnow with that pick, though, just so you know.
That's good to know. That is good.
I probably would have went Glasnow and Cesar Hernandez, but what are you going to do?
And then 12th round, I went Luke Voit.
Yep, solid pick. He just went in the 13th round of our draft. So after Greg Bird's 3-run home run today, you're not worried about Luke Voit at all, huh?
No. Greg Bird is not a problem.
Yeah, well, Greg Bird is not a problem when Luke Voit hits a home run. But when Greg Bird hits a home run, then it's a problem for Luke Voit. You don't understand how Yankees fans work, apparently.
I'm not worried about the fans. I'm worried about the team. 13th round, I took Alex Reyes. And, you know, the more I think about this, Alex Reyes, he's going too low.
Yep.
He's going way too low. And it's like I'm looking at him like, do I want Alex Reyes or Tyler Glasnow? Okay. Alex Reyes is better than Tyler Glasnow.
Yep.
I love you, Tyler Glasnow. You'll always be my boy, but Alex Reyes is better. Alex Reyes is probably better than Chris Archer.
Yep. He's definitely better than Chris Archer.
And so now I'm thinking about it, and it's like, I can't believe I let him fall this far. And especially with the Carlos Martinez thing, I'm almost certain he's in the rotation. I see so much upside with Alex Reyes. I know everybody's going to say all the innings and all that, but the Cardinals are trying to contend.
Yep. And they can. It's not that they're trying to contend. They have a good team, and it's an open division. They had no teams win 100 wins in that division last year. The Cubs haven't gotten any better. The Brewers are still the Brewers. And, I mean, the Cardinals won plenty of games last year, and they were very close to winning that division. So it's wide open right now.
And Reyes has legit ace upside. So I love it. These are the kind of guys I was trying to target. Reyes, Glasnow, trying to look for aces in this area. I don't really care about Cole Hamels and
Kikuchi
and
Lucchese. I did take Kyle Hendricks and
Porcello. I'm not really looking for Kyle Hendricks either. This is just what I'm trying to do, and it's fine. It's not gonna work. All the picks aren't going to work, so it's not
perfect. It's not going to work. It's not going to work, but listen to my podcast, so...
Well, I'm saying, the one of the biggest problems is people act like your 10th round pick, you're going to find some guy without warts there. And it's like, well, if they didn't have warts, they wouldn't be a 10th round pick.
Right.
So all these guys have problems. Like J.A. Happ, yeah, he's fine. I mean, yeah, sure.
J.A.?
Oh, yeah, J.A. I said J.A.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, Nick Pivetta, yeah. Everybody likes his underlying numbers, but He was terrible last year.
Yeah, don't get me started on Nick Pivetta, because I was a year too early on him, and now it's too late, so forget it. Yeah, I mean, so, these rounds are based on what you've drafted up to this point. So me drafting Patrick Corbin, James Paxton, and Aroldis Chapman to start off, I wanted Kyle Hendricks because I wanted that floor, and I feel like he's going to get you the innings, he's going to get you the strikeouts, he's going to get you the low whip, and he's going to get you the low ERA. That we've been trained to expect from Kyle Hendricks. So to take Kyle Hendricks at that point, it was better than taking, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez or Nick Pivetta or someone who can potentially just ruin your ERA, ruin your whip, potentially be dropped at some point in the season. I mean, Kyle Hendricks is probably not going to be dropped at any point this season. He's most likely just going to be my third best pitcher for the whole season, and then that's it. And everything else is going to be rotated. Like, at this point, that's what I'm expecting from him. And I had to take him because Patrick Corbin and James Paxton are aces, possibly, but they can also be injured for the entire year and not give me anything. So, I was looking for that kind of a guy. So,
well, you know, the thing about pitchers is that's really the case for anyone. As much as people don't want to admit it, the likelihood that a starting pitcher is out for the end for the whole season is like the same for all of them, except for guys that have had like chronic shoulder injuries and stuff. But that's pretty much how I think about it. And then my last pick I've taken was Jackie Bradley Jr.
Oh my boy, I was 2 years early on him. I was too early on him.
You were like super early on him.
No, way too early. Well, I traded for him before last season in RotoMasters 2. I mean, he did pretty good last season, though. I mean, it was the year where...
You still have him?
I do still have him.
So you should be good, then.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm fine in that league. We're figuring it out. It's not...
I've heard your team is stacked.
Oh, yeah. It's super stacked. It's stacked with... it depends on what you're talking about. It's stacked with something.
Stacked full of garbage. But,
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Jackie Bradley
Jr. It's recycling. It's not garbage.
Are you buying the JD Martinez teaching him his swing change?
No, I'm more buying the fact that I think that he's an obvious double digit stolen base threat now. I mean, what he had like 14 last year. I think that's a solid bet going into this year. And I mean, if you're getting 20 home runs and double digit stolen bases with anything over a 250 average after the 10th round is a solid pick in my eyes.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's got a nice fantasy profile, and he's in a good, really good offense. Yeah, obviously. So I think we wanted to talk about some of the players that have dropped, and in the TGFBI compared to NFBC. So one of the big ones I think everybody has been talking about is Madison Bumgarner. So I sorted NFBC since February 1st. He's going 75th overall, and he's going 100 overall in TGFBI. Are you in agreement there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not taking Madison Bumgarner anywhere anyway. So I guess that the drop in ADP is just the fact that this is – smart people drafting, and they don't want to take Madison Bumgarner either, and I can't blame them. So I don't know if you have any better analysis as far as Madison Bumgarner goes, but I don't want to take him personally.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm just not in on Mad Bum. I think TGFBI has it right here.
Yeah, he's an accumulator that I can't trust with the innings anymore. That seems to be what it is. Like, and it's not even just based on that one freak injury. It's just that I just don't think that he's as good as he used to be. I don't think that he can put up 220 innings anymore and get, you know, he's going to need to put up over 200 innings in order to get 200 strikeouts, which is not a good thing in the first place. Like, that's not what you want in fantasy. You want a guy that can pitch 160, 170 innings and get you 200 strikeouts regardless.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said there. So then we have pretty much all the relievers are going like 10 to 20 picks after like Craig Kimbrell, Aroldis Chapman, Blake Treinen. Edwin Diaz is only 8 picks, but I guess I'll throw him in there. Roberto Osuna, Wade Davis, David Robertson, Brad Hand is 9 picks, so that's close enough. Felipe Vasquez is about 9 picks. Andrew Miller, Corey Knebel. All these guys are getting dropped down, and I think I disagree here. I don't think everybody realizes how much like how much you have to spend on Fab to get closers and how many saves you need to compete in the overall. I think the closers are getting pushed down too far.
Yep, I completely agree with that. I mean, I was and it's not even – I mean, you want one of those top five closers. You want one of those guys who's going to net you the 80% of their team saves, and those are the guys that you just named. Aroldis Chapman, Craig Kimbrell, Blake Treinen, I mean, Roberto Osuna even, and even Ken Giles. Like, I like what Ken Giles did at the end of last year. I like what he did with the Blue Jays, and I don't see them putting anyone else in that closer role for their team this year. So I think that he is a solid bet, and I don't understand why people want to fight over closers. I don't get it. I really don't. It's like, you know you're going to have to fight over closers, even if you have Aroldis Chapman, even if you have Kenley Jansen, even if you have one of these guys, you're gonna have to pick up closers at some point. So why do you want to force yourself into it right at the beginning of the season? Why wouldn't you just net yourself some saves and then go after the closers that you think are the best options on the waiver wire rather than just grabbing them because you need them? Like, that's when you spend $250 a fab on Jacob Barnes for 1 week and then you drop him. Like, that is the most useless use of fab. Oh my God, that was an Austin Powers moment. But the most useless use of fab that you can possibly think of throughout the season is spending on an unnecessary closer.
Yeah, and actually, yeah, I agree there. And one of the guys that's actually going lower in TGFBI is Vlad Jr. Isn't that pretty crazy? I'm actually really surprised there. He's going 6 picks lower.
Yeah, man. I mean, that just goes to show you that a lot of these fantasy baseball writers just don't know about prospects. I think that's all it is. Like, I mean, what do you have another explanation for it, or?
I don't. I think that maybe NFBC people are a little more, like, think about it more so in the overall kind of component. So they're going for the upside of Vlad Jr. I would guess that's one of the reasons. Another guy, Brandon Nimmo, he's going about 20 picks lower. And yeah, I completely agree with this. I think outside of OBP leagues, I don't see why someone would own Brandon Nimmo this year.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I feel like he's like a, you know, 20 home run, 10 stolen bases, maybe. I mean, he's
I think he might hit like 230.
Yeah, yeah. I think that he's going to focus more on getting on base than hitting for average. I think that he's going to focus on getting his pitch. That's the kind of hitter that he is. Like, and that's not to say that he's a bad hitter. It's like Bryce Harper. Like, if Bryce Harper hits 240 and he gets on base at a 380 clip, that doesn't mean that he's a bad hitter necessarily. He just picks the pitches that he wants to hit. And I think that Nimmo is a good hitter, and he's so good that he gets to pick the pitches that he wants to hit. But that doesn't necessarily help us in fantasy outside of home runs and outside of, you know, RBIs maybe, but getting on base, like, he's not going to hit many singles, to be honest. He's going to hit more doubles and he's going to hit more home runs. That's kind of the hitter that he is. So I'm not really a huge fan of Nimmo for fantasy in that case, because he's more of a real life player than a fantasy player.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I do love him in OBP leagues. I think.
Oh, absolutely. I think that his OBP is going to be at least 100 points higher than his average, which is something that I always look for in OBP leagues. But it could even be as high as like 120 points higher than his average, because I think that average is going to be pretty low. Like you said, maybe 230, maybe 240, but his OBP could be about 360, 370, which is kind of crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, and mostly when I'm looking at over this list, I think a lot of the players that have been pushed down are mainly just pitchers, starting pitchers, relief pitchers, all around. I think that most of the people in TGFBI are pushing pitchers down. And so another one, obviously, Clayton Kershaw going about 9 picks lower on average. And I know we've been part of the Clayton Kershaw truthers, but I'm out. Can't do it.
Well, I mean, I think that's a lot to do with the fact that a lot of his injury news has come out over the past week or two since the TGFBI draft started. So the fact that his pick is lower may just be reflective of the news that has been coming out. I mean, Clayton Kershaw is still going to be a good pitcher. Can we agree on that? Like, when he pitches, he's going to be good, but we just don't know how much he's going to pitch.
See, this is the thing. I am with the way he's been struggling to even like throw bullpen sessions, I don't think I can say he's gonna be good when he pitches.
That's fair. I mean, what I was telling people is that I'm just avoiding Dodgers pitchers in general. This is a team that did not have one qualified starter last year. I think maybe Alex Wood was qualified. I think that's about it. I think he had 161 innings last year. But like the projection system, so Steamer, the bat, all of these projection systems are projecting Walker Buehler to get 168 innings this year. And you might look at that and think, okay, that's solid. That's nothing too crazy. Like 168 innings is fine. But at the same time, last year he threw 127 innings. That's about double the amount of innings he's pitched as a Dodger in the history of his pitching as a professional baseball player. And then second of all, they had 0 pitchers on the Los Angeles Dodgers last year that threw 168 innings. So I'm not buying into him as a third round pick. And I just feel like overall, like it's tough to buy pitchers. Like I'm not buying pitchers in that third, fourth round window. I'm waiting after that. I'm waiting for Corbin. I'm waiting for Paxton because I think that they're actually having small amount of value on their upside right there.
Yeah, I'm not in on Walker Buehler because the innings concerned. Let's look at some of the positive ones. The top guy, Ryan Brazier. Shout out to Alex Chamberlain for autoing.
He hated that pick, he said too. And I like Ryan Brazier.
Yeah, but he took him at 202 overall.
Yeah, it's too high.
Yeah, he took him 115 picks over his ADP. So that's one. I think it's only happened in one draft, but Peter Alonso went 174 overall, yep, which is really high. I guess they saw the home run and kind of just wanted to move him up a little bit. Ross Stripling, the counter to Clayton Kershaw, going 177 versus 235 for NFBC.
Yeah,
I just can't do it with Stripling there. I don't see how he pitches more than like 120, 130 innings, because it's not like even if Kershaw's out of the way, they're still talking about Julio Urias possibly earning a rotation spot. It's just like they're so deep, and I can't do it with Stripling.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this with the Dodgers before. Is like their strategy is strength in numbers, basically. It's like
keep them all healthy for the playoffs.
Yeah, they have Kershaw, they have Buehler, they have Stripling, they have Maeda, they have Hill, they have Ryu, they have, I mean, my God, they have the amount of starters that they have on that team is ridiculous, and they're able to make it through the regular season with a strong win loss record because all of these guys pitch about 150 innings, 120 to 150 innings. None of them get tired out. They all pitch to their maximum every single time. And yeah, that's great for their stats. But at the end of the day, this is a roto league. And you're going to need the accumulation of strikeouts. You're going to need the accumulation of wins. And ERA and WHIP are only two categories. So if Ross Stripling is affecting your ERA and WHIP, he's probably netting you a loss in wins, in strikeouts, And I mean, obviously he's not going to get any saves, but you know, just overall the Dodgers pitchers are I'm just avoiding right now.
Yeah, plus they have guys that are coming up too, like Dennis Santana's coming back from injury. Yep. They have Dustin May and Mitchell White in AA. Yep. It's just like they just have so many pieces. I think Tony Gonsolin's probably going to be in the pen, is at least from what I've read, but he's already in AA too. So it's just like they just have so many arms, and it's like these guys are going to be filtered into the rotation too, and they're just going to – that's just what they do. And I don't know. I have a hard time trusting Stripling because he was left off the playoff roster too last year, and I think people are kind of forgetting about that. Michael Franco, I don't know how many drafts he's been taking, but he went 241. I know I've been talking about how I like Michael Franco this year, so I think – projection, people are using projections and drafting some of these guys. Let's see, Jorge Polanco is a guy. He's going 180 versus 223 in the NFBC. I think that's a really good pick. Yep. I don't know if you're a fan of Jorge Polanco. He's kind of like that 270, could be like 15-15, maybe 20-15.
Yeah,
he has a good year, so I'm a big fan of that pick there. I've been debating taking him in my draft. Jake Bowers, he's going about almost 40 picks above where he's going in the NFBC. Another guy who could be like 18 to 20 home run guy with 15 stolen bases, probably only hits like 250, but he qualifies at first base and outfield. And it's like we do want the stats, but finding a first baseman who contributes a little bit stolen bases later is interesting because it's at a spot where you're not really finding stolen bases. So I like that pick. I don't know if you're a fan of it.
Oh yeah. I mean, I like Jake Bowers. I feel like him moving to Cleveland and getting the playing time is huge. I think that, well, I'm big on, I always get his name wrong. Is it Brandon Lowe or Brandon Lau?
Brandon Lau.
I mean, I feel like I love Brandon Lau, and I think that him and Jake Bowers are very similar. But if you want to buy someone, you buy the guy with playing time. And I feel like Bowers has the guaranteed playing time. Lau is going to have to rely on being a utility man more in Tampa Bay. But I feel like the 20 home runs, I feel like the 10 stolen bases are there. And it's just all about, is he going to hit for a respectable average? And that's, you know, that's the key. I do like
I was going to say, the one thing about Lau,
yeah,
is the itch. Shout out to him. He's ready for Razzball now. But he told me that he was watching a game the other day, and Lau was actually playing first base for the Rays.
He's going to be playing all over. He's going to be getting into that lineup however he can, I promise you.
That's kind of interesting to me. Yep. So
he can play anywhere.
We'll have to watch out for that because he could be like a –
second base,
first base eligible guy.
His non-brother and same last name, Nathaniel Lowe, is also a threat to play first base. And he hit a monster yakker today. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't really get to watch too much today.
He hit a massive piss missile today. It was.
But you were gonna say something about Lourdes Gurriel.
Yeah, I really like Lourdes Gurriel this year. I mean, to me, he seems like the kind of guy who can hit 20 home runs. He can steal double digit bases. He can hit for a 260-270 average. He's gonna play all year. He's gonna have middle infield eligibility. I mean, is there anything to dislike with Gurriel this year?
I guess he has horrendous plate discipline, but I mean, that doesn't really matter as much.
Really though, it's not terrible. Like it's for the amount of experience that he has in professional baseball, it's not terrible. He's only been playing for 2 years now. So,
well, in
American professional baseball, he's only been playing about 2 years now. So let's, you know,
He's a very aggressive hitter.
For sure.
And that can lead to a low batting average. But I think he's a guy that makes a ton of enough contact to be able to have a solid average.
Right. And he makes good contact. He makes hard contact. So that's a key too. We were talking about how BABIP is more focused on hard contact than anything else. So Lourdes Gurriel, I mean, he's going to be able to hit the ball hard. He hits a lot of line drives, and he hits a lot of high drives too. So that's kind of key for someone like that. And if he's going to steal you double-digit bases, then that's going to be even more of a profit right there.
Yeah, and I mean, if you just look at last year, he hit 11 home runs, and he hit 281 and only 263 plate appearances. So obviously that power is not going to pace out. But yeah, 20 home runs seems well within reason if he plays the full year. I don't really think he's going to give you many stolen bases, though. Maybe like 5 to 8, somewhere around there.
See, I'm thinking definitely 10, but I mean, I get what you're saying there. I just don't think they have. I don't think they have any reason to hold him back. I feel like, you know, just get him out there, get him the stolen base reps, get him whatever reps he needs, and then they're not going anywhere this year. So,
not a Devin Travis fan.
I'm not a Devin Travis fan. Is that
I think all the Devin Travis fans went away in like 2016.
Yeah, I don't think they play fantasy baseball anymore, if we're being honest.
Yeah, so is there any other interest? So one guy, Joey Lucchesi, he went a little bit higher, about 34 picks ahead. 178 in TGFBI and 212 in the NFBC. I don't really like it. I just don't see a ton of upside there. I don't think there's really a high floor. So I don't know. I don't really like it.
Yeah, no, I'm out on him too. I wasn't really big on him as far as going into the season. I feel like the hype that he's getting is kind of undeserved. I get that he is a funky left-hander, and I get that he can strike some people out. But at the end of the day, he doesn't strike out that many batters, and he walks a lot of batters, and he gives up a lot of contact. Like, he's just not really that exciting of a pitcher. He's kind of like Carlos Rodon, but not like, you get what I'm saying? Like, he can strike out a ton of guys, but he only has two pitches, and he gives up a lot of hard contact, and like the floor is just not really there.
That's not current Carlos Rodon. Last year, Carlos Rodon doesn't strike anyone out.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And doesn't give up hard contact. So he's kind of like old Carlos Rodon. But yeah, and then I will say one more guy I wanted to take really bad, but then the more I thought about the format where it's 7 bench, no DL, Shohei Ohtani, I just couldn't do it. He's going 33 picks higher than an NFBC. 168 versus 201, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't buy a util only bat who may miss the first month of the season in a no DL league.
Yeah, I hear you. I think one of the guys that I see going, I mean, one of these guys that's going really high is Willy Adames, and I get the upside with him, but I just don't really see it coming to fruition just yet. I think that we just need to see a little bit more with him, and I'm not really going after him as an upside pick, because I feel like his upside is like 18 home runs and 15 stolen bases. I don't really think that there's any real standout tools with Willy Adames. I think that he's a solid major league player, but I just don't know the upside for fantasy.
All right, so there's a few more players I want to hit on, and then we can wrap it up for the night. Yeah, so one of the guys, Nick Senzel, he's going 180 in TGFBI versus 210 in NFBC, and I love this pick. Honestly, I do. I think he could easily be the Reds' starting center fielder. I know there's the report that he might not that he doesn't think they're going to call him up from day one, but the Reds are really trying to win, just like we said with the Cardinals. They have made win-now moves. I think he's their best option in center field, and I think he can easily hit 290 and go like 2015 this year. Easily.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I might agree with less stolen bases and more home runs, but other than that, I think the 290 is a solid bet. I think that he could be their starting center fielder. I think that their lineup is a lot better than it was, and yeah, I think we can move on because I like the Senzel pick too, and I was looking at him with one of my next picks, so...
Yeah, he got popped really early in my draft. I think he went like 165. He went at the turn in the 11th round. Yeah, 165. So he went really early in my draft. Luke Voigt, obviously. I love Luke Voigt. He went 21 picks higher than his NFBC. There was another one. Garrett Hampson went 25 picks. And I know that's one of my personal favorites. I was kind of upset he got taken a few picks before me. I think there's a ton of upside with batting average and stolen bases. And then the last guy I want to ask you about is your boy, Byron Buxton.
My boy or your boy? I feel like that's definitely your boy there.
It's neither of ours.
No.
I mean, I did like him this year. I did, because he was going low. And I was like, well, it's the same player that everyone loved last year, so why not just take him at this discount? And now it's getting pushed up to where it's not a discount because he hit two spring home runs. And he's going 20 picks higher than his NFBC ADP. And I think it's still a good gamble. Like, he's going like in the 10th round, and I think that's fair.
Yeah. I think Garrett Hampson and Byron Buxton are pretty similar players if you want to get down to it. Like,
I think the one thing that pushes me to Garrett Hampson is
Coors.
He's better at getting on base, or I guess there's two things. He's better at getting on base, Coors.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to add Coors in there for sure. Buxton might have like louder tools, I guess, but at some point those loud tools kind of get diminished by the fact that you haven't really done much in the major leagues, and Garrett Hampson is kind of fresh and someone that I would rather roll the dice on because he just has more upside, and I think he has a higher floor just based on what he's done in the past. I don't think that Byron Buxton's hit tool is exactly as high as Hampson's, and I think that that's going to be a good fantasy value right there with Hampson. As far as Buxton, I didn't buy him. I'm not going to be the one that buys him. And, you know, whatever. Like, I feel like he's just a good upside pick like he is every year. Yeah, whatever. Like, he's just – we know what he is at this point. Like, he's a high upside pick. He has a low floor. I think he's being taken in a good range for Byron Buxton at this point. Finally, he's being drafted in the proper range for Byron Buxton.
I do worry that once it creeps around towards March and he's still hitting in spring training, it's the hype is going to be –
it's going to be
massive.
Ridiculous. It's going to be ridiculous, yeah. But Luke Voigt, I think we both really, really love, and he hits massive dongers, and he can lift a lot of weight. And I think that I would love to close on Luke Voigt because he is a sleeper. I mean, he could hit 30 home runs this year and hit for a good average. Like, I think that that's one of the things is, like, he can hit for a 270, 280 average too. Like, he's a good hitter.
All right, I'll one-up you. I think he can hit 40 home runs this year.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. His power is unbelievable. Like,
one of my favorite things about Baseball Savant is you can go back and look at the home runs that they hit, and you can kind of see what pitches were thrown and, like, where they hit it. And and obviously it's fun because you get to watch home runs hit. And Luke Voigt, he just hit so many to like right center field and right field.
Yeah.
It's just like that opposite field power is just massive.
And as a Yankees fan, I can tell you, as a Yankees fan, I can tell you that a lot of those home runs were hit with like one hand. Like he just hits pure cock rockets. Like they're just, I mean, he is just, I can't even explain it. You just need to watch Luke Voigt highlight reels.
Gotta end it on the cock rockets.
You gotta end it on the cock rockets. That is what Luke Voigt hits. He doesn't know anything else other than massive, massive dingers. That's about it. That's all he can do. But apparently he wants to win the job with his defense. So let's give him some credit here. He can scoop a bounce ball, apparently. You good with that, Walter?
Yeah, that's what matters.
All right. Well, I mean, we don't really like ease out of this. We don't fade out. We just kind of like end the podcast. Like, is there anything?
It's over. Thanks for coming, everyone. Follow TGFBI and and make sure to look at the standings that Smata has put up and everything.
Yeah, make sure. Yeah, because Walter's in the top 10, so make sure. Make sure you look at the standings.
Make sure to check that out. You'll see if you don't even have to scroll down to see my name.
Yeah. All right. Well, other than that, I mean, I guess we're out of here.
To the bottom.
I'm not doing great, but I love my team. I think it's just because I have four pitchers and it's a little bit biased, but you know, what are you going to do? Everyone has their biases. You can look at my team and believe for yourself, but for Walter McMichael at Real Fake Walter on Twitter, I am Paul Martin at Paul the Martin. And thank you for joining us for another Real Fake Baseball podcast. Please subscribe to Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Subscribe to the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. And we're going to get out of here. Thanks for listening again, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.